Welcome to How We Got There. I am your host, Mike Davis, founder of Go-To-Market Guides. I interview thought leaders and founders in the Salesforce ecosystem to help ISVs learn new things to try and mistakes to avoid. This episode of How We Got There is brought to you by ISV App. ISV App is used by leading Salesforce ISVs and OEMs as the central toolbox to reduce churn, increase renewals, identify upsell potential, and close more deals. ISV App is the only plug-and-play solution for the AppExchange App Analytics API and provides deep product insights. The setup is easy and takes less than 5 minutes. Visit isvapp.com, that's isvapp.com, to learn how you can take advantage of usage data in your app today. All right, I am here with Stony Gruno, who is the co-founder of Breadwinner and an advisor for SalesBolt. Stony, good to have you on the pod.
It is a real pleasure.
So I guess to start out, tell us a little bit about how you found your way into the Salesforce ecosystem.
That would have been a long time ago. I was in London and I wanted to work with nonprofits. And I touched on Google Apps briefly, and I somehow stumbled onto Salesforce, and I started helping nonprofits with Salesforce. And after doing that for about 5 years and finding, you know, what Salesforce was doing through the Salesforce org program, really fascinating. I loved the consulting side. I don't know if I loved running a consulting firm. So I knew it was the time for a change. And I was like, you know what? We've always struggled to connect Salesforce to Xero, which was our online accounting system. For the Americans, it's pretty similar to QuickBooks. So I started looking into that, and eventually that turned into Breadwinner, and it turned into, you know, a full-fledged business. And oh my goodness, our first stab at it, Breadwinner had, I think, one object and two tabs, and it was painful to set up, but it got out the door, and amazingly, people paid for it. I think it helped that we didn't really have much competition. And then it just slowly grew from there. And after a couple of years, people kept on saying, can you do QuickBooks? And we're like, no. And after enough of those, we said yes. And then it moved into NetSuite. And then it moved into payments. And it just kind of kept on going.
Nice. And you touched on a little bit about what Breadwinner does. What about SalesBolt? We'll talk to me a little bit about what they do.
Awesome. So I got to know Craig, who founded SalesBolt. He had an interesting challenge, and we both installed Breadwinner years ago. So I kind of knew him from that. And he talked to me about, you know, how to structure SalesBolt. And that's been a fascinating journey where it's kind of a weird amalgamation, but the overall need is the best up-to-date data for your company is probably the self-sourced, self-authored data of LinkedIn. But getting that data out of LinkedIn into Salesforce has a lot of complications, but there's a real need. SDRs are kind of living, SDRs and recruiters, I should say, are living in LinkedIn. And the second they find someone they like, they need to get that into Salesforce somehow. So that's half of it. And the other half is once they are in Salesforce, how do you check perhaps every single month they haven't changed jobs or got promoted? Because a change of jobs is either a existing customer risk, but it's also a new prospect potential at the company they just moved to. So that's what SalesBolt does.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of David Skok, and he has a great website for entrepreneurs. And from a CS perspective, something that I dealt with quite a bit with TaskRay back in the day. But top two reasons for churn is failure to successfully onboard your customer. And then right behind it, number two is loss of a champion who drove that purchase. Those two are how you keep your net dollar retention up.
And it was fascinating when you look at the companies that advise on pricing. You know, of course, they understand that per user is often a good way to go. But if you do per user, then the first thing the customer does is thinks to themselves, okay, how do I give this to as few people as possible? And if that gets down to just two or three, and one or two of them leave, you're completely at risk. And I very much appreciate if you can figure out how to structure your pricing around any other metric, so all of a sudden you can say, great, everyone in your org gets to use it.
So, yeah, absolutely. Something you said about Breadwinner that I want to drill into a little bit to bring you back a ways was just those first sales. To bring you way back when
people were buying the thing initially, you shared it was a little, it was quite a bit harder to implement at the time. But how did you find your first customers, and what were those conversations like for some founders that might be just working on their first handful?
Oh, it was almost hilarious how, I mean, I had never started or been involved with anything in the software space like this before. I was an English major who got into computer consulting. So this, you know, with Joe Milton, my co-founder at Bremner, this was very much us just, you know, doing the best we could. And as I recall, I think we just hoped people would find us on Google, but we hadn't even built in the way to turn them off if they didn't pay us. So we just had, welcome to your extended free trial was like all they got in the beginning. And I just tried to get them desperately to work. And as the months went by, we finally were able to build in a payment mechanism. This is because we were using a more of a data synchronization to Xero rather than the traditional Salesforce LMA at the time. And after like 3 months, I emailed everyone and said, your free trial is coming to a close. Please subscribe here. And I was honestly expecting no one to subscribe. And amazingly, I think all 12 of them did. And I think I was jumping up and down with joy. And then I realized that, you know, the monthly developer fee was still about 10x the revenue. And I stopped jumping up and down for joy because I just realized we were going bankrupt slower. But it was still an amazing moment when that happened. But yeah, it was a bit of luck and Google. And I still was working at Third Sector IT at the time. So there wasn't quite that insane pressure, but the pressure was pretty bad. I got to say, I wouldn't want to repeat that again.
So going back through your years with Breadwinner, from a go-to-market perspective, what's the best program that y'all have created over the years?
While Breadwinner definitely can solve a myriad of problems, people generally don't search for those problems. They generally say, you know what, I need something that's going to connect Salesforce to NetSuite. And then they go ahead and they Google, how do I connect Salesforce to NetSuite? So I think that, you know, companies that provide a more conceptual service, they have to go out. It's very hard for someone to Google a question and get to their product. Whereas with Breadwinner, it was incredibly straightforward. And the competition, if you type in Salesforce consulting, or Salesforce consultants, the competition to get on Google's first page is incredible. But if you start to add a second major keyword, Salesforce NetSuite, Salesforce QuickBooks, Salesforce Xero, all of a sudden, there's only really going to be about 3 to 8 players in that space. And so getting onto Google's first page, when you're kind of operating in that two keyword situation, is surprisingly, I don't want to say easy, but it's surprisingly doable compared to, say, ranking number on Google's first page for a Salesforce consulting company. And I think the other challenge is that with Xero and QuickBooks, the ACV wasn't that high. And I didn't know anything about ACV when I started this. I didn't understand how important it was, what the annual contract sold for. But it's in the, you know, low to mid 4 figures for Xero and QuickBooks. And once you have an ACV in that range, in fact, you can Google Jason Lemkin, how low can you go? And he basically says that $3,000 a year annual contract value is about as low as you can go and still have an inside sales team. So if you've got an ACV in the, according to Jason Lemkin, 3K range, you really can't do that much more than answer phone calls, you know, or answer emails. Certainly can't do outbound. It's hard to pay for other things. And we also weren't even sure what to pay for. You know, how do you find someone who has Salesforce and QuickBooks or Salesforce and Xero? Like, who are these people? No one advertises the banking, the financial system they use in their background.
Right. And I mean, you bring up a good point there around SEO, search engine optimization. And I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole learning about it. I mean, it's a career for mm-hmm. people and there's great folks out there, but it sounds like you stumbled upon it and did some good content writing. And I think this is important for people to hear around the problems that people are experiencing and just rank really high. Can you share, like, once that aha happened, like what you did with that aha moment?
I don't know if there was an aha moment, but I'll be honest. When we started Breadwinner connecting Salesforce to Xero, there was only one other app out there, and they had kind of semi-mothballed it because they were a consulting company. And it was like them and Zapier, and that was it. So I think we got on Google's first page almost overnight. You know, and then we just kept on saying, okay, how do we make sure people are writing articles about, you know, Xero and Salesforce, particularly SIs that would want to, you know, work with us? We're like, great, you can just do a blog post, point to our website, throw in some keywords, do the anchor link. And it just, you know, kept on gone on solidly being there. So there really wasn't an aha moment. It was almost the opposite, because we're like, great, we've got these free leads coming in. How do we get more? And it was like, you know, the first, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 leads in a month had a zero marginal dollar cost to them. Amazing. But that 31st lead, you know, practically impossible. You know, it was a very weird situation. You know, we could certainly do things like Dreamforce and user events and work with partners, but there was no time that I can really think of where we're like, oh, look, here's a lead generating machine. We give it money and it gives us leads.
Yeah. And as you've been building Breadwinner, what are you most proud of?
On the architectural level, probably Breadwinner for NetSuite. The main competitors there in the space are some pretty good iPaaS programs like Soligo and Boomi. But you get one of those programs and it is very much like a kit car. You don't get to drive it home that day. You get to start assembling it. And it took us a long time to get there, but we replicated NetSuite's standard objects so that you connected Breadwinner to NetSuite about half an hour to go through the kind of slightly complicated NetSuite authentication, let it sit there overnight, and you come back the next morning and the customers are almost shocked that every single invoice, sales order, line item, product, you name it, payment, is now in their Salesforce org as native data and reportable. And that was a pretty complicated thing to do, because we also had to have middleware. You can't actually have Salesforce communicate directly with NetSuite. The developers know more about this than I do, but XML and JSON and SOAP and REST, and it just got such a muddle that we had to have our own custom middleware. So like, in terms of an architectural, I think I was most proud of that. In terms of go-to market, I'm not sure. I look at Sendoso, and I remember I installed them back in 2015 or so. And if you had said to me back then, hey, Stony, here's a company that sends Starbucks gift vouchers, and here's your own company, which is eventually going to go on to integrate with, you know, Salesforce to all the online accounting systems, who's going to be bigger? I'm like, oh, we will. And Sendoso is, I think, like 500 staff and growing. And of course, they do so many more things. But you know, the obvious answer is not always the right answer.
Yeah, and it's about solving a real specific problem. And it brings us to another thing you and I have talked quite a bit about, and just my appreciation for optionality in the ecosystem and just some different examples. I mean, Sendoso, venture-backed, and there's different ways to go about it. So as you kind of look at paths for ISVs and examples out there, how do people weigh out the pros and cons of each path?
I'm gonna kind of think about Peter Thiel here, who really talked about you have to win something and you keep on making your circle of focus narrower and narrower until you can win it. You know, and Breadwinner fell into that pretty darn easily with connecting SalesBolt and Xero. And I think if we had tried to start on something which had great competition like NetSuite, we would have been kind of, you know, destroyed, or at least it would have gone nowhere. But I think for me, it's like, how ambitious is the challenge? How much experience do you have? And then kind of how much backing do you have? Because if you're Salesforce consultancy at the same time, you can afford to let it have a slow burn. You know, whereas if you throw everything in and say, I'm gonna put all my energy behind that, I think it can be really scary. You know, especially for anyone who has, you know, a kids and a mortgage, and they're just looking at, you know, these two competing entities. You know, their kids obviously need some money, but their business, their other baby needs some money. I think that's a level of stress that's, it's really just, it's tough.
Yeah. And in building, on the flip side, what's been your biggest mistake?
That would have probably been Snow Goose, which was, we built this early on before we had really committed to one kind of niche. And Snow Goose helped UK charities understand their fundraisers. And I went around, I talked to a bunch of charities because I just come from that space. And I was like, do you want this? And I would describe it. And they were like, yes, we absolutely want it. So we built it. And then we went back to them. And they're like, well, we said we wanted it. We don't really want to pay for it. We're a charity. So can you give it to us for free? And I was like, you do realize this is a charity product. So everyone would be getting it for free. And they're like, yeah. And that was just kind of the horrible mistake I made of maybe not hearing what I wanted to hear, because they did say yes, but I just didn't kind of follow through. And I wish I had said, great, can you put, you know, £1,000 down to reserve or something like that? And I would have quickly realized a year earlier, and a lot of, you know, time and energy, that they, just because someone says they want it, you know, if you can't get them to put anything down, they don't really want it.
Yeah, it's a sales lesson around like looking for no's and giving people an opportunity to say no to you. Because, I mean, some people are direct and other people are less direct and will be kind to you, even though they won't give you money eventually. And so I think that's a good learning to share.
Yeah. And I think they were being honest at the time, but it's a bit more like, you know, if you say to someone, would you like a puppy, or would you like a puppy to lick your face? I think most people would be like, yeah. Like, here's a puppy, and they're like, oh, I got some logistics and commitments going on here. So I feel it's, yeah, everybody thinks they want a puppy until it eats your furniture.
As a dog owner of a dog named Mello, who is from the streets of Houston with scars all over his face, I can attest that some dogs are scarier looking than others.
Oh, how did you come across Mello?
We adopted just a rescue, and my wife was not super impressed with him at first meeting, but she warmed up to him.
That's heart of gold, I can only assume.
Thinking through your lead sources today at Breadwinner, what are your top one or two producing lead sources? Like, do they come through your website? Did they come through the AppExchange referrals? What does that look like?
I mean, that's the weird thing, is that when you rank well in organic, you don't know if someone gets to your website first and then clicks on the free trial and ends up on the AppExchange. You don't know if they go to the AppExchange first and search for a word like NetSuite or QuickBooks. And you also don't know if they go to Google and search for something and your AppExchange link shows up. So I don't really know how the people solved it. And the other ISV partners I talked to don't really have a great answer to this, but it's really hard to track how someone ends up clicking get it now on your AppExchange, because they can come in direct. They can come in kind of Google direct. They can come in AppExchange search. You know, there isn't really anything. And I've asked Salesforce if we can embed our Google Analytics tracking tag on our AppExchange page. Because right now, if you Google come to Breadwinner and click get free trial, it looks like a website abandonment. And I don't really know if anyone, we put up a intermediary form to try to get some clue, but I don't know if anyone has really solved that. So we just get a bunch of installs that we don't know where they come from, but we presume it's organic on some level. And then of course, Salesforce partners, you know, Salesforce partners get all asked all the time. And even Salesforce AEs occasionally will reach out to us and be like, quick, you know, I've got a prospect and they need to connect to blah, blah, blah accounting system. And we're like, great, you know, here you go. This is how we do it. So I would say organic/word of mouth and Salesforce partners, the AEs not really, but the Salesforce SIs and even the ISVs and OEMs who, you know, the number of ISV OEM apps that will have an invoice object, you know, a lot of the professional services automations, a lot of the billing products, a tremendous number of them will have as their final output a invoice object. And then the customer says, well, great, what am I supposed to do with this PDF? Am I supposed to copy and paste this into my accounting system? And then they're like, you know, and that's exactly where they look for and turn to Breadwinner to be like, great, Breadwinner, when we create the invoice, I want you to automatically create the invoice in the accounting system. And when the finance team marks it paid in the accounting system, I need that to appear back in my app. And that's where we get a lot of our leads, just because we solve the ISV problem of how do I legitimately claim that I have integration with these three entirely different accounting systems.
Brilliant. Yeah. And to go back to your comment about, if anybody's listening from the AppExchange product management team, please allow us to cookie back and forth across our platform or our website and the AppExchange listing, because that is a challenge around attribution. And the AppExchange organically ranks so across the search engine, where a lot of times if people do search for something, they'll hit the AppExchange first. One tip from Place Technologies, they're another ISV, and what they did within their test drive, which I thought was brilliant, was they put some UTM parameters from their test drive. So if they go from the test drive to their website, they at least know where they originated from. And so not ideal, but it. I thought it was a real clever way. Hat tip to Alex over there for figuring that out.
That is good. We shut down our test drive because out of the blue one day, our AppExchange listing for just one of our products was delisted. We're like, what is going on? And Salesforce started emailing us. And it turns out that this is really awful. Someone had, I never even found out what, put in something truly awful into our test drive account because we let people enter data. And I don't know whether it was a joke or a teenager or what. And I don't even know what they put in, but it was apparently so shocking that a test drive user complained to Salesforce. And then we just like, all right, no more test drive. So we haven't had a test drive since then. I don't know if there's a, it would be amazing if we could refresh every 24 hours, but I don't think that's possible. So there we go.
There you go. There are ways to do it, to do that data refresh every 24 hours. You and I should talk about that. But yeah, Flow does a phenomenal job at being able to do some of that refresh stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's the last thing you want. I talk about a bad first impression for a new buyer is some information like that. Hey, so you mentioned SI referrals and Salesforce partner referrals. What's your opinion on incentivizing SIs for referrals?
So historically, at least at Bremner, we found that the most productive partners not only don't ask for a referral fee, but often don't even want one. Whereas if we get the first question of, you know, what's my take on this? You know, I used to be an SI, and I firmly believe that you should provide your customers with the best solution out there. And they never want to come out and admit it, but I've had a couple on the more questionable side be like, well, I'm not going to refer you if you don't give us anything. And I'm like, great. I think this is a good moment for us just to, you know, take a pause. And I found that historically, those are the organizations that every year will have less consultants, whereas the ones that just, you know, refer us because of the best solution, their consultant count grows. And I'm only looking at like what the LinkedIn numbers are. But yeah, that's been my experience. So I'm generally of the opinion that you don't need to, but maybe that's because we're in more of a niche space. If you're in a highly competitive space, I don't know how that would differ. And I think we've considered it, certainly on a higher ticket value like NetSuite, Bremner for NetSuite. Where we are competing in an area where we're providing a software solution that could reduce their consulting hours. And that's an area where, you know, one of the people on the Slack group you run kind of, I think not entirely jokingly said, you know, if you're launching a new ISV app, don't save consultants too much time. And it might have been tongue in cheek, but I don't think it was entirely. So I think that's a concern.
Yeah, fair point. We've been having a lot of good conversations, you included, around incentivizing SIs and or not, and then really how to garner their attention. And I think it's where I've come to is the SI community. It's not like it's not a single shade. Like they're dramatic by region, by product, by size of consultant. You need to treat consultants differently and be intentional about it. So I think that's like been, as I've been thinking about this a lot over the last 12 months, I think that's my real learning.
And I think the other challenge is when you're a horizontal app, I mean, Bremner, you know, works with people who have Salesforce and an accounting system, you know, that's pretty broad. And then you get these SIs and they're like, all we do is, you know, and they just list their vertical. And it's so fascinating. And how do you communicate with them effectively when they expect you to be a vertical application? And you're like, no, we work with people who issue invoices, you know?
Does your business issue invoices?
Not everyone, but a lot of, you know, the companies doing recurring billing will be using Recurly, Chargeify, Stripe billing. And then other companies that are more checkout focused will, you know, be using some point of sale. But anybody who's doing B2B and large value to large ticket items, yeah, there's an invoice in there. And so like, we've seen everything. We bizarrely have, we've seen, you know, we joke that we get all the sinners. We got, one time we had tobacco, e-cigarettes, a number of alcohol companies, a number of Canadian companies that were doing something in the marijuana space.
There's a market for everything.
What do you know? I mean, you know, you got to use something to manage your strip.
And what do you think every ISV should do this month from a go-to-market perspective?
I will admit that I don't take my advice as well as I should, but talk to your customers and see if you can meet them, especially as the world is opening up again. I just miss meeting people in person and going into their office and talking to people. I would mainly do that with SIs, but I just kind of loved meeting up with SIs for a beer. And then all of a sudden, all these things that you would never get to find out, they're just so happy to share in that personal interaction. So yeah, I guess that's my grab a beer with an SI partner is my answer to that.
Perfect. So we're going to wrap up here with the final three rapid fire questions, 10 second answers. Ready to go?
I think so. I'll do my best.
Awesome. Stony, who's one company or person in the ecosystem that you track or follow?
You know, the businesses that I find most fascinating are those doing truly amazing, groundbreaking things like SpaceX. And I have to admit, I don't follow that many businesses in the Salesforce ecosystem the same way. So apologies, I'll pass on that.
All good. And what would you tell yourself day one of working in the ecosystem?
Takes so much longer than you expect. And also, you know, just to modulate your expectations. You know, I always try to remember that Salesforce is I think $24 billion company, and I can't even do the math, but I imagine Brebner is 0.01 or 0.01% of that. So, you know, it's understandable where we fall in the kind of pecking order of attention.
Yeah, right on. And lastly, what gives you energy in your personal life?
I actually like what I do, and I like what our software does. You know, you'd think that saying that we build software that synchronizes invoice data means that it's the most boring thing on the planet. And I won't always argue with that. But if you think about what the world would look like if we didn't exist and if solutions like this didn't exist, there'd be a lot more copying and pasting. You know, so we're not out there necessarily saving lives, but we're saving, I imagine, hundreds of hours a day of the most mundane drudgery of people could do of copying and pasting from one system to another. And I actually feel very proud of the fact that we take away, nobody goes to work saying, I wish I could copy and paste. You know, they go to work to make a difference and to hopefully deliver something. And I hope we get to enhance or at least take away the drudgery that could slow them down.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, I mean, like, we're not saving lives here. I'm certainly not in my line of work, but we're also helping people out and like, we're not doing any harm. And you guys certainly fall into that category. And what that tells me is like, hey, let's not take ourselves so darn seriously all the time. Let's have fun.
I like that very much. It sounds beautiful.
Stony, hey, thank you so much for joining and sharing. Appreciate the time.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something from today's episode of How We Got There. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. I'll see you here next time.